Good morning. I'm calling to order the first meeting of the Conference Committee on House File 5247, which is the Supplemental Tax Budget Bill. Welcome, everyone. It's great to be together in this room again and see everybody. Today we're going to do a little bit of overview. We're going to do some intros, and we're going to get to work adopting some items. We're really excited about, I think, both sides, about some of the provisions that we're able to bring forward to build on the work we were able to collaborate on last year between the House, the Senate, and the Governor's Office. And so we're happy to have the Commissioner joining us this morning. And so, Senator Rest, did you have any opening welcome you wanted to give?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just want you and your conferees to know that I and my conferees are committed to completing a tax bill to offer to the House and the Senate that will be endorsed by at least 68 votes on your side and 34 on mine.
Great. And then hopefully one at the end of the day. we'll just kind of do a quick, you know, so that because we're kind of going to move through our overview, and so when folks are talking, it would be good if the public knew just your name and what your role is. So maybe we can just start at that end, and we'll just move our way around.
Good morning. My name is Madam Chair. My name is Rachel Johnson, and I am an analyst for Senate Counsel.
Casey Mom, Senate Fiscal Analyst.
Madam Chair, members, Eric Sylvia, nonpartisan Senate Counsel.
Madam Chair, members, Nora Pollack, Senate Counsel.
Madam Chair, members, Eric, I represent St. Cloud in the Senate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I'm Scott Dibble. I'm a state senator in Minneapolis.
Madam Chair, Ann Rest, State Senator New Hope.
Madam Chair, Senator Bill Weber, District 21, and lead on the Senate Tax Committee.
Madam Chair, members, Grant Hochschild, I'm the state senator from the Arrowhead and Iron Range region.
Madam Chair, members, Mitch Bergeron, committee administrator for Senate Arrest and the Taxes Committee.
Madam Chair, members, Joanna Bears, legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Madam Chair, Paul Marquardt, commissioner of Department of Revenue, and just want to say to both chairs, thank you so much for allowing me and the Department of Revenue to be here at a seat at the table and for being part of this process. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, members, Esther Agbaje, State Representative from Minneapolis.
Madam Chair, I'm Matt Norris. I represent Blaine and Lexington in the Minnesota House of Representatives.
So, Madam Chair, my name is Patrick McQuillan. I'm the Committee Administrator for the House Taxes Committee and Property Tax Division.
And my name is Aisha Gomez. I represent South Minneapolis in the House.
Madam Chair, Dave Lissigard, Iron Range.
Madam Chair, members, good morning. Representative Liz Lee from the east side of St. Paul.
Madam Chair and members, Alex Hagler with House Research.
Madam Chair and members, Jared Swanson with House Research.
Madam Chair and members, Chris Klayman, House Research.
Chair Gomez and members, Sean Williams from House Research.
Madam Chair, members, Katrina Highmark, House Fiscal Analyst.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal.
All right, thank you, everyone. And I didn't mean to skip over Commissioner for opening remarks, but I appreciate you just welcoming us. And we're going to talk today about the child tax credit and sort of our differing positions. And so the commissioner will be offering some more remarks, I think, during that time, since that's the governor's main priority. So, all right, thank you. All right, so first off, we're going to do some really kind of brief and high-level overviews of, especially focusing kind of on the bigger items where we diverge in our positions. And so first we're going to have House and Senate Fiscal go up. We have copies, of course, of all of these materials, including the side-by-side spreadsheet that I believe our fiscal analysts will be using. And I'll turn it over to them whenever they are ready.
Okay. Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. I will cover the summary page of the tracking sheet, and Mr. Mum and Ms. Highmark will be covering the spreadsheet as well. To begin, on the summary page, looking at lines 1 through 3, these lines show the current law general fund February forecast amounts for general fund tax policy revenues and for property tax aids and credits. These lines are just a reference point so you can see the changes in the tax bill relative to the base. Lines 4 through 6 show the changes for the House and the Senate tax bills. Starting on line 5 shows the changes to tax revenues. For the House, there is a revenue reduction of $10.27 million on line 5 and $32.230 million in the tails. And those are biennial amounts. On line 6, there is also a cost to property tax aids and credits of $42.729 million. And in the tails, there is a savings of $28.6 million. The total change in the House tax bill to the bottom line in the 24-25 biennium is $53 million. And in the 26 and 27 biennium, it's $3.590 million. Madam Chair, I'm just looking to my colleague, Mr. Mum, for the Senate.
Madam Chair and members, Casey Mum, Senate Fiscal Analyst. The comparable bottom line numbers for the Senate bill are a cost of $50.57 million in the current biennium and an increase in general fund revenue of $900,000 in the fiscal 26-27 biennium.
Before we turn the page, just quickly, the lines 13 through 28 show the changes or modifications to non-general fund accounts, and there are 14 non-general fund accounts that have that show changes or a creation of a non-general fund account, and it's listed on these lines. Turning the page to tax revenues, we're on page 2 at the top. Just quickly, I want to just remind members that when looking at tax revenues, a positive number is a revenue gain, and a negative number is a revenue reduction. Starting on lines 1 through 5, line 1 is the child tax credit, and this is the minimum credit establishment. And for the House, this provision is a permanent provision, and it is estimated to have a cost of $8.3 million It's estimated to have a cost of $16.8 million in fiscal 26 and 27. And on line 2, the child tax credit, there is a change in eligibility in the tax bill that allows an 18-year-old to be eligible for the young child tax credit. This has a cost of $15.5 million in the tails and also a cost of $7.8 million in fiscal 24 and 25. These two lines will be discussed in greater detail at another point, but this is kind of a quick just overview of these two parts of the child tax credit and the impact to the general fund as they are in the House tax bill. If it's okay, would you like me to do the Senate?
Yeah, that's
okay. Okay. And the Senate has a comparable provision on line 1 for the minimum tax credit. That has a cost of $9.9 million in fiscal 26 and 27, and there's no cost in fiscal 24 and 25. Again, we'll cover those in more detail at a later point. We'll discuss kind of the differences in eligibility and the accounts, and that we'll save that for another time. Moving on, line three is the section 530 exclusion that is identical in both the House and the Senate. Line four is the subtraction for foreign service worker pay. And I will turn to my colleague, Mr. Mom, to cover that.
On line four, the foreign service worker pay subtraction carries a cost of $10,000 beginning in fiscal year 25.
We're just, Patrick kind of talked to you guys, but we're going to just try to go sort of article by article. And if there's something that is, you know, a high dollar item that we kind of diverge on, maybe we can do that. But, you know, we're going to try to get a bunch of stuff adopted. So if we could just kind of do, you know, more articles rather than individual lines, that would be great. And my apologies, maybe I didn't adequately communicate that to you. So that's my fault, not yours. You're doing a great job. But thank you.
Madam Chair and members, the remaining items in the individual income tax section of the spreadsheet are the discharged course debt subtraction, which is largely the same between the House and the Senate. The Senate also modifies the definition of income for calculating the renter's credit, which increases the cost of that credit by a negligible amount beginning in fiscal year 25. Lines 7 through 13 are Senate-only provisions. There's an expansion of the master's degree attainment credit, the Minnesota education credit, and a new employer scholarship credit, and a credit for employer-paid tuition for enrollees in aerospace programs. Beginning on line 18 through 22 are just some small changes to corporate franchise tax. The employer-paid tuition credit for aerospace programs is the only cost item in the Senate bill. The sales and use tax section has no provisions that are identical. The Senate bill has an exemption for modifies the data center's sales tax exemption in a manner that has no cost. There is an effect from the moist snuff excise tax imposition that reduces the demand for the product that shows up as a cost to sales tax, general sales tax revenue.
Madam Chair, for the House, there is a sales tax exemption for the city of Woodbury, and the cost is in fiscal 25 only. And this is a sales tax exemption is a general fund cost, and it is similar to an exemption that the Senate has carrying in their bill, and that will be covered in a different section of the spreadsheet. Moving on to lines 35 through 39, these are other taxes. One change is the amusement device tax that has an unknown impact, and there are other provisions in here. The sum of these provisions is at the bottom. It is a cost of $1.82 million to the House and a cost of $10,000 in the tails. Total revenues, again, the cost for the fiscal 24-25 biennium is 10.2 on line 41 and 32.2 in fiscal 26 and 27. The Senate's carrying a cost of $3.2 million in 24 and 25 and about $9,016,000 in the tails. That brings us to page three.
Madam Chair, members, at the top of page 3 are two lines showing non-tax revenue coming into the general fund from transfer that are from transfers from two special revenue accounts. Both the House and the Senate repeal the tax modernization account that was established in last year's tax bill and transfers the existing $5 million into the general fund. Similarly, the governor's bill and the House and Senate approaches create a special revenue fund account called the Child Tax Credit account there's a transfer into that fund and subsequent transfers out from the fund back into the general fund to cover the estimated cost of the Child Tax Credit expansion. Moving on to the property taxes section of the spreadsheet, lines 55 through 58 are several interactions. Two of them are interactions with the property tax refund and other items that are identical in both the House and the Senate positions.
Madam Chair, members, starting on lines 59 through line 67, we have several interactions with property tax refunds. I'm going to highlight those larger items that are different between the House and the Senate provisions. The first is the interaction with the Class 42 Community Land Trust classification modifications. And I do want to note that the signs on the property tax aids and credits portion of the spreadsheet are reversed, and so a negative number indicates a cost savings of $460,000 in the tails. That is a provision that is only in the House. Moving forward, we have the Taconite Homestead credit increase in both the House and the Senate on line 64, which has a cost savings of $1.7 million in fiscal 26 and 27. And then in the House, the other large provision in these interactions are the market value exclusion increases interactions with qualifying homesteads, veteran homesteads, and other homesteads on lines 65 and 66 for a total savings of $2.8 million in fiscal 26 and 27 and a cost of $1.19 million in the same biennium.
Madam Chair, lines 68 through 77 largely consist of the effects of modifying the classification of market farms property. They have that change has negligible effects on the property tax refund, school building bond agricultural credit, and the agricultural homestead market value credit.
Moving on to local government aids, line 81 and lines 81 through 83 describe provisions regarding local homeless prevention aid. There's a one-time increase to both counties and tribal governments, which results in a total of $5 million in fiscal 24 and 25, as well as a repeal of the homeless aid prevention expiration date in fiscal 30. Both the governor's provision and the Senate have, a provision regarding a tribal nation aid payment shift, which has a net zero cost impact in fiscal 24 and 25. And then the House has a provision for emerald ash borer aid of $1 million in fiscal 24 and 25.
Madam Chair, lines 86 through 88 are Senate-only provisions that increase township aid and soil and water conservation district aid in fiscal year 25 only by $2 million.
Lines 92 through 98, Madam Chair, are provisions that are low cost or no cost to both the House and Senate. Many of them are identical. I'm going to highlight the identical provision on line 92, which is the tribal property tax exemption for Red Lake Nation property in Minneapolis, which has a fiscal impact of $122 million. The remaining provisions in this section do not have fiscal impact. The moving forward to grants to local governments, lines 102 to 104, the House has a provision for a grant to Browerville Public Schools of $580,000 in fiscal 24 and 25, which I also understand is contained in the Senate, but in a different portion of their bill. In lines 103, we have a difference between the House and the Senate in terms of the amount of the grant to South St. Paul, $100,000 in fiscal 24 and 25 in the House and $250,000 in the Senate. And then in the House provision, there is a additional aid to the Anoka County Soil and Water Conservation District of $50,000. Moving on, the next section deals with appropriations. I will be discussing the appropriations for the Department of Revenue on lines 108 to 114. First, we have the advanced property tax refund for seniors, which is a House-only provision with costs in fiscal 24 and 25 of $158,000 and fiscal 26 and 27 of $234,000. The political contribution refund electronic requirements is a provision in both bills that is identical. The direct free file system is a provision only in the House bill of $5 million in fiscal 24 and 25 and $2.3 million in fiscal 26 and 27. The tax credit outreach grants, there we go, is a provision that is in both bills. The House bill has slightly higher amounts. Continuing with our high-level overview, the taxpayer assistance grants are the same in both bills. The House bill has a corporate tax base erosion study for an appropriation for the Department of Revenue of $655,000 in fiscal 24 and 25, and a corporate franchise tax information disclosure provision in appropriation again for the Department of Revenue of $480,000 in 24 and 25 and $396,000 in 26 and 27.
Madam Chair, on line 115 is an appropriation to the Department of Revenue to administer changes to the child tax credit. That is a governor's position that is not present in either the House or the Senate bills. On line 116 is an appropriation to the Department of Transportation in the Senate bill to cover the costs of certifying the credit for the short line railroad infrastructure credit. And on line 117 is an appropriation to the Office of the State Auditor in the House bill to implement the recommendations of the local sales tax task force. On lines 124 and 126 are two transfers from the general fund into special revenue fund accounts. These are the accounts that I mentioned earlier that, I mentioned one of them earlier to pay for the cost of the child tax credit. And one of them is to pay for sales tax refunds, which are outlined on the following page. These are Senate only, with the exception of the Woodbury Water Tower project. These are present only in the Senate bill. And the way that the funding works is there's an a transfer from the general fund into the sales tax refund account. And the amount for refunds listed here is appropriated from the sales tax refund account. And so the total cost of those refunds is $33.91 million.
On page 6 of the spreadsheet, the remaining lines 174 through lines 222 highlight the changes in the House and Senate tax bill to the non-general fund accounts. Line 180 shows the total net changes to the legacy funds of $40,000 in the House, and these are mostly, these costs are due to interactions with sales taxes, or provisions that interact with sales taxes. The Senate also has an interaction with the legacy funds of $30,000 in fiscal 24 and 25 and $70,000 in 26 and 27. Line 183 of the spreadsheet, there is a change to the healthcare access fund, and this is due to the MnCare research credit. It has a revenue neutral impact of zero in the 24 and 25 biennium and the same in the tails. This provision is identical in the House and the Senate. Lines 186 through 196 of the spreadsheet show the establishment of special revenue accounts due to the changes in the House tax bill with the local sales tax authorization. These accounts do not have funding in them right now, but they are established in the bill. Lines 199 of the spreadsheet shows a change to the tax modernization account. My colleague mentioned that earlier. And that tax modernization account has a, it is a transfer out of the special revenue fund of $5 million in 24 and 25, and that is, again, identical in the House and the Senate. Finally, lines 202 of the spreadsheet, there is an increase to the environmental fund with a one-time dedication to the solid waste management account. Both the House and the Senate have this provision, but the amounts are different. The House is increasing the allocation to the resource management account, and that increases $1.821 million and $3.252 million for the Senate. And then finally, the final sections of the non-general fund spreadsheet are to minerals, and my colleague, Ms. Highmark, will cover these changes.
Thank you, Ms. Templin. Madam Chair, members, lines 205 to 222 discuss the minerals provisions that are contained in Article 3. These provisions are identical in both bills, and so therefore I am not going to go into the amounts, but rather I will talk about the funds. On line 205, we are talking about the TACNI Economic Development Fund, which has a transfer to the City of Chisholm for the Bridge of Peace. 208 discusses the TACNITE property tax relief account with the homestead credit increase, which was also discussed as having a general fund savings earlier in the spreadsheet. The TACNITE municipal aid account has a transfer out into the Range Association of Municipalities and Schools, which shows the transfer in on line 214 into that account. Line 217 shows the transfer from the Douglas J. Johnson Economic Protection Fund into the Iron Range School Consolidation and Cooperatively Operated School account, which is also demonstrated as a positive into that account on line 220. And then lines 221 and 222 describe the impact of the tax revenue bonds debt service in fiscal 24 and 25.
Chair Gomez and members, by my count, Article 1 of the House bill has 10 provisions. First, it establishes an electronic filing system for the political contribution refund. That's the same in both bills. Second, it modifies the set-aside expiration dates for the beginning farmer credit. Third, there's a requirement that the Department of Revenue disclose certain corporate franchise tax returns. Fourth, it establishes a minimum credit for the child credit. We're going to talk about that in more detail later. Fifth, it allows 18-year-olds to qualify for the young child credit in the child credit. We'll also talk about that more later. Sixth, it requires the Department of Revenue to establish a system to allow taxpayers to directly free file their returns to the department. Seventh, it establishes an income tax subtraction and homestead credit refund subtraction for coerced debts that are discharged. Eighth, it allows the housing tax credit amounts from the 2023 allocations to roll over to tax year 2024. Ninth, it decouples from the federal Section 530 safe harbor for worker classifications. That's a similar provision in this House and Senate bills. And finally, it requires the Department of Revenue to complete a study on the corporate franchise tax base erosion. And that concludes the discussion of Article 1. House bill.
Madam Chair, as Mr. Williams mentioned, the Senate similarly contains an requirement for the department to set up an electronic political contribution refund system. There are some differences with the House and Senate provisions for purposes of the child tax credit. The Senate also includes an income tax subtraction for foreign service pension or retirement pay. The Senate includes a credit for modifies the current credit for attaining a master's degree in a teacher's licensure field to include a master's degree in special education. It modifies the eligible expenses for purposes of claiming the K-12 credit to include expenses associated with career and technical education. The Senate also provides an income tax credit for employers who pay certain tuition payments for employees who work in aerospace and aviation. The Senate includes a also subtracts the amount of coerced debt that was forgiven for purposes of the renter's credit, which is now in the income tax chapter. The Senate makes some modifications to the credit certification process for the short line infrastructure railroad credit. And the Senate also includes an income tax credit for employers who employ certain workers in the Shakopee Area Workforce Development Program. Madam Chair, I think that concludes the high-level overview of the income tax article.
Great, thank you.
Madam Chair and members, Jared Swanson with House Research. Similarly to the previous article, we're going to stick to a high-level overview of Article 2, which in both bills is the Property Taxes and Local Government Aids article. In the House bill, there are a number of provisions related to property tax exemptions, including a clarification on the exemption for property owned by charitable organizations that's used to provide rental housing. There are exemptions for property owned by the Grand Portage Band and for property owned by the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, as well as a retroactive property tax exemption for the Red Lake Nation College in Minneapolis. The House bill contains three sections related to electric utility cooperatives, attachments, and appurtenances. These provisions clarify that except for substations and transmission or electric generation equipment, utility cooperatives' power distribution systems are exempt. There's an increase in the tier limits for Class 1C homestead resort properties. There's an increase in the market value exclusion for homesteads owned by a veteran with a disability. The House bill also contains a new property tax credit known as the Advanced Homestead Credit for Seniors, which provides eligible seniors with a property tax credit equal to 50% of the property tax refund the individual received in the prior year. There are sections that allow for property tax abatements for certain land bank properties, and there are a couple of changes to the local homeless prevention aid, including a one-time increase in the aid amount and a repeal of the sunset of the aid.
Madam Chair, members, for purposes of a high-level overview, I'll note that the Senate article contains similar or identical provisions relating to the exemption property owned by an Indian tribe, as well as land bank provisions and attachment and appurtenances. Differences include in the Senate article there is an exemption provided for private property that is used for an entity for grazing purposes. There's also a clarification for Class 4 D1 low-income housing rental property classification for income averaging. There is an expansion of the definition of agricultural land for property tax purposes to allow for small market farms. And I believe, Madam Chair, Ms. Johnson will continue the walkthrough for Article 2.
Madam Chair, some additional differences in the Senate language is that the Senate article modifies the percentage of city local government aid payments that are distributed in 2025. There also are changes to the local affordable housing aid program, including the establishment of a maintenance of effort requirement and some additional modifications. And there also are changes to tribal nation aid, changing notification dates and payment dates ongoing to earlier in the year, and changing the payment date in 2024 from fiscal year 2025 to 2024. There also is a reporting requirement established for the public safety aid program, and there is a one-time appropriation for supplemental soil and water conservation district aid, and an amount of $2 million, and a $2 million one-time appropriation for supplemental town aid.
Great, thanks you guys.
Madam Chair and members, moving on to Article 3. Article 3 in both bills is the minerals article. And in the interest of
Keeping things at a high level, I think we'll just say that this is the minerals article in both bills, and Mr. Sylvia will note a couple of the differences between the House and the Senate bill.
Madam Chair, members, there is one additional section in the Senate minerals article, and that is a section that allows scholarships from a county scholarship fund to be used at an accredited skilled trades program within the county, in addition to current law, which provides that those scholarships must be used at a state college or university institution within Minnesota. And lastly, the two sections within both bills that provide authorization for the issuance of bonds. The Senate includes some additional language concerning review and recommendation by the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board. Provides that the commissioner shall not retain any funds for administrative costs. Requires that certain projects funded through sources other than through the issuance of bonds maintain the allocated amount and designated use. And lastly, there are a variety of differences in terms of the amount, grants, and designated uses. Other than that, Madam Chair, the articles are identical.
All right, thank you. Sales and use taxes up next.
Madam Chair and members, Alex Hagler with House Research. Article 4, the sales, gross receipts, and excise tax article. Section 1 is the 0.5% provider research credit, and these are substantively the same in both bills. Sections 2 through 5 of the House bill establish a gross receipts tax for the amusement devices and make some conforming changes to the sales tax statutes. Section 6 and 8 repeal the tax on illegal cannabis and controlled substances, and these are both the same in House and Senate. And lastly, in the House bill, Section 7 provides a construction exemption for Woodbury, but it is limited to purchases made before July 1st, 2025.
Madam Chair and members, I'll just note some of the differences with the Senate article. The Senate establishes a sales tax refund account from which refunds for 31 different local jurisdictions would receive sales tax exemptions for construction materials for various projects. The Senate also expands the current exemption for firearm storage units to include firearm safety devices, otherwise known as trigger locks. It makes some modifications to the current exemption for qualifying purchases by data centers to provide for an upfront exemption for certain large-scale data centers. The Senate also expands the current exemption for nonprofit snowmobile clubs. It modifies the definition of moist snuff and tobacco products to include products that are made from synthetic nicotine. The Senate also modifies the sales tax exemption enacted last year for certain construction materials used in the city of Ramsey. Madam Chair, the Senate also includes sales tax exemptions for construction materials used in qualifying housing development products in the cities of Duluth and Ely, and then for redevelopment districts in the city of St. Cloud. And then the Senate provides for a transfer of the amount sufficient to pay the refunds for the construction materials exemption projects from the general fund to the sales tax refund account.
And we will go more in depth on the tax increment financing article, I think, probably tomorrow, so we can keep it pretty high level for now.
Sure. Madam Chair, members, Article 5 in both the Senate and House bill of the tax increment financing articles. There are special laws provided for each city. However, there are a few differences. I'll just note that City of Ramsey is the same, Maple Grove is the same, St. Paul is the same. There are differences in the provisions for our Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, Eden Prairie, Edina, Minnetonka, Plymouth, and St. Cloud, and they are identical provisions for Let's see. The city of Edina has two, and Minnetonka. Other than that, Madam Chair, could probably do the rest tomorrow.
Great. Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair and members, Article 6 is the local sales and use taxes article, and I'll just start with the major differences that the House has that the Senate does not, and then maybe Ms. Pollack can talk about what the Senate has and the House
okay.
has not.
Okay, and similar to the tax increment financing provisions, we'll be going more in depth on this one in the next couple meetings, so no need to go deep. Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair and members, this Article 6 is the local sales tax kind of reform article. The major differences are the House bill contains two fewer projects. They do not include the airports and community centers as authorized projects. The 1% cap on local sales tax rates includes taxes that were imposed prior to July 1, 2024. There is a prevailing wage requirement difference where the House requires it for all projects, and the House contains a revenue sharing provision in the form of an equalization distribution.
Madam Chair, members, I would also note that the Senate language does not contain as many modifications to the current statute governing local sales taxes. As Ms. Hagler mentioned, the Senate allows local sales tax revenues to be used for a couple of additional projects. The Senate and the House have different definitions for parks and trails that would qualify for a local government to impose a sales tax without legislative authority. The Senate also requires that the ballot question for the local government to impose a local sales tax must contain some language stating that a no vote may result in an increase in property taxes, whereas the House explicitly prohibits that type of language. The Senate does not have a revenue sharing requirement, and there are some different requirements in terms of verification of whether a project qualifies for a local sales tax to be imposed to be imposed without legislative authority. The Senate would require that the Commissioner of Revenue verify the project, whereas the House has some different requirements for verification and oversight that involve the Office of the State Auditor. Madam Chair, I would also note that the Senate includes some language regarding the Hennepin County ballpark tax, which adds some language to that section, saying that the new language regarding local sales taxes does not apply to the provisions of the Hennepin County ballpark tax. And Madam Chair, both articles repeal the moratorium that was enacted last year.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, Article 7 of the House bill is the special local tax article. There is not a comparable article on the Senate side, so I'll just run through the House article. Sections 1 and 2 provide provisions requiring local lodging taxes to be assessed on the whole price of lodging, including services by accommodation intermediaries. And then sections 3 and 4 modify the food and beverage tax in downtown Minneapolis from 3% to 2.5%, and then extends the boundaries of the district to include more of the North Loop area. And that concludes Article 7.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, Article 8 is the public finance article, and they are pretty much the same in both House and Senate.
Madam Chair and members, moving on to the miscellaneous article, which is Article 9 in the House bill and Article 8 in the Senate bill. In the House miscellaneous article, there are the taxpayer assistant grants that Ms. Highmark mentioned in the spreadsheet overview. There is a one-time increase in the solid waste management tax proceeds credited to the Environmental Fund for county waste reduction and recycling programs. The House bill also contains a provision that allows certain veterans organizations to use additional gambling proceeds for the repair, improvement, or maintenance of their property. There are sections that would allow cities to establish land value taxation districts. And within the House miscellaneous article, there are also grants to cities for homeowners to cover costs of tree removal related to emerald ash borer, and grants to the Anoka County Soil and Water Conservation District, the Browerville Public Schools, and to the City of South St. Paul.
Madam Chair, the Senate also includes very similar language regarding taxpayer assistance grants and tax credit outreach grants. The Senate also includes a provision limiting assessments on sales, corporate, and sales, corporate franchise, and income taxes if certain conditions are met. The Senate has a different amount of the appropriation for SCORE grants. The Senate also has a different approach to the Soil and Water Conservation District aid. The Senate has a different approach to the Browerville Public School grant. That amount is included in the sales tax article for a sales tax exemption for construction materials. The Senate also provides an appropriation to the City of St. Paul in a different amount for $250,000. And the Senate appropriation for the tax credit and taxpayer outreach grants is slightly less than the House's. Madam Chair, the remaining articles are the Department Income and Corporate Franchise and Property Taxes and Local Government Aids and Miscellaneous Provisions. They are on the Senate side. They are as presented in committee, and we can answer any questions if you have them about the department articles.
Great. We're good. The rest of the articles are just the policy and technical bill. So, all right. Sorry. Oh, Chair Rest.
Sorry. Madam Chair, we're prepared to make motions on some of the same and similars now, and we have each of us taken an article or a bunch of articles to do that with, starting with Senator Putnam and Article 1, if you'd be so kind to call on him.
All right, Senator Putnam, to same motions on same and similar items in Article 1, Income and Corporate Franchise Taxes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move that we accept Senate language Article 1, Sections 1, 2, and 8. All three of these provisions deal with the political contribution.
N20.
Well, the first three of those refer to the political contribution refund, and 20 refers to the resources for corporate tax study, corporate tax erosion study. I'd also like to move that we accept, still within that motion, to move that we accept House language for Article 1, Section 3, and Article 1, Section 14. I'm sorry, Article 1, Section 13, and Article 1, Section 14. Should I go over that one more time?
Okay, yeah. Can you please, we're going to do those as, those are three different items, so we're going to do them as three different motions.
Okay. Madam Chair, we would just recommend that we do them article by article, and so we're ending up with just five motions with regard to that.
Okay, so, yeah, will you please
just
go
trying
over,
to
just
save
say
time
that again,
or
Senator Putnam.
That are the same.
Because you said something about the corporate erosion study?
Yeah, Madam Chair, that's the Article 1, Section 20?
Oh, of the Senate.
Oh, gotcha.
That's the appropriation for the political contribution.
Political contribution refunds, yes.
Oh,
so that
the
was
House,
my understanding.
The Senate, yes.
Right.
My fault, Madam Chair, I apologize.
Okay, there was nothing about the corporate erosion study in that motion, was there?
No, ma'am.
Okay, that caught me a little off guard. I mean,
no,
if you
ma'am.
Want to accept it, I'm good
not
with that,
yet.
But.
No, ma'am. No.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Literacy is not a requirement in the Senate, so apparently I don't know how to read.
You're doing great. Senator Putnam, if we'll just go through the whole article or Article 1 motion again, and then we'll take a vote on it. How about it?
So, Madam Chair, for clarity's sake, would you like those disarticulated into three separate motions or one solid motion?
No, I think we'll do it by article. So, okay.
Madam Chair, I move that we accept Senate language for Article 1, Sections 1, 2, 8, and 20, and that we accept House language in Article 1, Section 13, and Article 1, Section 14.
Great. And so you explained the first set of provisions, and then the Article 1, Section 13 is a rollover of the Affordable Housing Tax Credit. Article 1, Section 14 is the Section 530 nonconformity, just for clarity. All those in favor of the motion by Senator Putnam, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion carries. The provisions from Article 1 are adopted. Thank you, Senator Putnam. Up next, we're going to go to Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I will move in the property tax article to the property tax exemption for the Grand Portage Band, House language, Articles Section 3, but there is an A44 amendment, so I will incorporate the A44 by reference into my motion. Is that in front of everyone?
Yes.
The A44? Great. Property tax exemption for the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, Article 2, Section 4 of House language.
Okay, I don't want to interrupt you, Senator Dibble, but my staff thinks we have to just do, we're just going to do a separate motion on the adding the A44.
Okay. All right.
Okay,
Madam Chair, I'll move the A44 amendment.
Excellent. All those in favor of the A44 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, no. Motion carries. Please continue. My apologies.
Thank you. So does that mean in this motion that I'm now making, we don't include that? That is now a
right.
language
so,
adopted. So, okay. So
we'll just include that provision
we'll
as
start with Article 2, Section 4 of House language has to do with the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, an item having to do with cooperative associations, electrical distribution systems, Article 2, Sections 2, 11, and 12 of House language, the tribal nation aid payment shift. I'll move the Senate language in Article 2, Sections 20, 21, and 24. A reporting requirement for public safety aid, Senate language in Article 2, Section 22. The City of Stewart aid penalty forgiveness. Move House language, Section 28 of Article 2. The Red Lake Nation College exemption language, House language in Article 2, Section 29, and the local homeless prevention aid sunset repeal, and that's also in Article 2, of course, House language, Section 31.
Great. Thank you, Senator Dibble. Is there any discussion, just because we're making big motions, before we move to a vote? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, nay. Motion carries. The provisions from Article 2 are adopted.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Rest.
We weren't always successful in what I consider to be generally a protocol, and that is when the House and Senate language are identical, we're going to move the House language. But in some of these, it's one section that's separate, and so that's not always going to be possible for us to do, just to let you know. But
yes.
Since it is a House file, that's, to me, that's an easier way to do it, to always choose the House language when the provisions are identical.
Thank you.
But on how in Article 4, on page 20 of the side-by-side, if members want to follow along, we move the House language on Article 4, Section 1, which is a minor difference on what the percentage is for the how the percentage is expressed on the credit for research. With regard to our next part of that motion for Article 4 is the House Article 4, Sections 6 and 8. and they are on two different pages in the side-by-side, 23 and 33, and it involves the controlled substances tax repeal. This was Senator Umu Bayton's bill. And then in section on the Senate language, also on page 23 in the Senate, on the Senate side is the city of Ramsey, not the county, construction exemption from Senator Barr. And they really do promise this time not to return. But they have, I think this is the third time they are promising never to come back on this project. But they really do try hard to get it right. It's just that it doesn't always occur in the same year. So, Madam Chair, my motion is to approve House Language Article 4, Section 1, House Article Section 4, Article 4, Section 6 and 8, and Senate Language Article 4, Section 10.
Thank you, Chair Rest. Is there any discussion on Chair Rest's motion on Article 4 provisions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion carries. The provisions from Article 4 are adopted. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I turn to Article 7, Special Local Taxes, and I move that the committee hereby adopt the House language as included in Article 7, Sections 3 and 4, relating to City of Minneapolis Liquor, Lodging, and Restaurant Taxes, and City of Minneapolis Downtown Taxing Area.
All right. Senator Weber has moved that provision from Article 7 on the Minneapolis Downtown Taxing Area. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On House Article 8, Senate Article 7, Public Finance, I move the Senate language as relates to Article 7, Sections 4 through 7. And basically, this is the same language as the House provisions in their respective article and dealing with definition of debt obligation, clarifies Minnesota Bond Allocation Act, application for residential rental projects, and finally, application for all other types of qualified bonds.
Excellent. Senator Weber has moved those sections of the public finance article. Chair Rest.
Thank you. I would just also point out that the first three sections of that article are identical in both bills, but they deal with financing issues in school districts and the E-12 finance conferees requested that those provisions be carried in their bill, so that's why they are not being mentioned here.
Thank you for that clarification. Is there any further discussion on the public finance article? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting those sections, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion carries. The those sections of Article 8 are adopted. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next motion relates to House Article 9, Senate Article 8 under miscellaneous. And I move that the Senate language for Article 8, Senate Article 8, Section 1, which relates to taxpayer assistance and outreach grants and policy language concerning the same, and the Senate language concerning Article 8, Section 2, limitation on assessments made by the Department of Revenue for taxpayers who have previously followed their advice that this amendment be adopted.
Excellent. Is there any discussion on the amendment? On the motion, excuse me. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion carries. The provisions from Senate Article 8 are adopted. Senator Hauschild.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Just a clarification, would you like me to do these line by line, or can I do this article together?
I think we can do the article together.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
So I move that the Senate language from Article 9, Sections 1 through 10, be adopted. Those include credit allowed for the film production credit, net income, qualified retirement benefits, delayed business interests, definitions for the renter's credit, long-term care payments for the renter's credit, additional information about the renter's credit, a short line credit, and temporary additions and subtractions for individual estates and trusts. And then I'll also do House Article 11, Sections 1 through 3. This includes a provision about Class 1B property for blind and disabled homestead property, procedure and conditions for abatements, and administration for local affordable housing aid. And then lastly, from the Senate language, Article 11, Sections 1 through 5. And this is, sorry, Madam Chair, I'm just getting my bearings here. Enforcement administration orders and penalties, return for qualified heirs, annual audit and certified inventory for lawful gambling. And I think that's it.
Excellent. Is there any discussion on Senator Hauschild's motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Motion carries, and the Department of Revenue Policy and Technical Bill provisions are adopted. So, Senator Rest.
Madam Chair, that concludes our motions with regard to sames and similars in the bill that have been previously identified by nonpartisan staff. We are ready to move to the next part of the agenda, which is discussion of the CTC.
All right. Thank you, Senator Rest. So as Senator Rest just said, we're going to just have a little bit of discussion as we close our day up about the child tax credit provisions in each of our bills. And to start out with, I'll go to Commissioner Marquardt for opening comments, and if you want to just describe the governor's position on the CTC provisions.
Madam Chair and committees, thank you so much for that. And again, thank you for allowing us to be part of this debate. Thank you for bringing two solid bills to this table. That is really, really good to see. And just the fact that the first thing we're talking about is the child, the child tax credit, that exemplifies the priority that everyone has for that child tax credit, which has been fantastic. And last year, as we know, with the leadership and hard work of Governor Walz, Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, the Minnesota House of Representatives, and the Minnesota Senate, we passed a nation-leading child tax credit last year. And that's $1,750 per kid, no limit on the number of children, totally refundable. And if we do this right, according to Columbia University, it will reduce child poverty by 33%. And the new numbers, as of 6:30 this morning, right now there's been over 200,000 families who have filed for the child tax credit to the tune of $515 million that have gone out to benefit 414,000 children. So, again, thank you for the work of the legislature in enacting that with the governor and lieutenant governor, because this is really benefiting families around the state. All three bills, all three proposals have a minimum child tax credit of 50%. And let me just back up on the rationale behind the governor's proposal, which was the payment protection pilot, and why this is so important. So as I just mentioned, you have a child tax credit that can reduce child poverty by 33%. But studies show that one way to really enhance the effectiveness of the child tax credit is by doing advanced periodic payments, which means taxpayers would get a certain amount of an advanced credit of what they have from the previous year prior to the next year, so maybe July through December, whatever that might be. And so right now, the plan is to move forward starting next year with an advanced periodic payment. Part of the bill last year in the law authorized the commissioner to set up advanced periodic payment system. And we're, excuse me, ready to do that next year. And so one of the things as far as a periodic advanced payment system, one of the big obstacles that was found when we had the advanced earned income tax credit from 1979 to 2011, one of the big obstacles was taxpayers' uncertainty of if their income changed, would they have to pay back this advanced credit that they had received the year before. And that was cited as one of the major reasons that the participation rate was low in that advanced program. There's been others around the nation that have had advanced programs just locally, not statewide, that studies also show it is this uncertainty, the stress of not knowing if my income changes, if my spouse gets a job or I get a promotion and all of a sudden I've received this advanced credit, will I lose it? So that is why this minimum child tax credit is so important. And so the governor's plan has a 50% minimum. You would be assured a 50% minimum credit from your previous year credit. It would be based only if your income changed, not if your family status changed. So it's based on income. There is an income cap on it. Of $60,100 for a married joint filer and $49,570 for a other filers. And then that's for one child, and it would increase by $9,000 for each additional children. So if you had two children married, it'd be $69,100 before it would phase out. The governor's plan has a four-year pilot program. It would sunset after 4 years at a cost of about $45 million. And the governor has set a special revenue fund up that would be set up in 2025 because the four-year pilot would start in 25 but go through 28, which is outside the window. So this $45 million would be a special revenue fund set up in 2025, and the main reason for that is because, one, to see if this is working, take a good look at it and so forth, but also to keep within the parameters of the budget tails and so forth because of the concern on the budget. The benefits of this is, and one other part is this would apply in the governor's plan to all tax filers that take the child tax credit, so it would be those who are taking the advance credit, but also those who take the lump sum credit. So the benefits of this is, of the minimum tax credit, is more participation in the advance periodic, which we know is highly important to the effectiveness of the child tax credit in reducing child poverty. It also reduces family stress. There isn't this worry, which also has long-term outcomes. And it also creates this incentive to be able to raise your income as the year goes by. So that's that. And just any other comments on the bill? Thank you for this. As I said, it's a very strong bill. You look at the provisions of both bills, it's going to help our tribal nations, our counties, our local units of government, and the priorities are all in the right spot. And so I enjoy this process, and you, Madam Chair, Chair Gomez, Chair Rasch, you have brought wonderful bills, very strong bills that are going to help the state of Minnesota and all Minnesotans. So again, thank you for allowing us to be a part of this.
Thank you so much for those comments, Commissioner. And Yeah, I think that I was just pleased to see all of the alignment in our bills. And when you talk about those kind of principles that we bring, that we're trying to help out kids and families that need a hand, that we're helping out our local partners and our tribal partners. So I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Williams on our side, who's going to just kind of talk about some of the differences between the approaches. And then certainly if Ms. Pollack has anything to add, that would be great at that point. So I'll go to Mr. Williams.
Chair Gomez and members, at the request of the chair, I put together the comparison table. It's a House research memo that should be in your packet. So that's the document I'm going to be working from. I'm just going to kind of briefly describe some of the policy differences in how the House, Senate, and Governor's proposals are structured. So the first policy difference in the first row of that table is the income limitation, which Commissioner Marquardt mentioned.
Sorry, Mr. Williams, I just want to make sure that everybody has the document that he's referring to. It says memorandum at the top, and it has a little table in it. So everybody looks like folks have got it. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Please proceed, Mr. Williams.
Chair Gomez and members, so the Senate and Governor's provisions match on the income limitation, as Commissioner Marquardt described. The House provision is not limited by income, so there's not a separate income limitation for the minimum credit. We retain the existing phase-outs in the credit for general eligibility for the child credit. And the minimum credit is also limited to taxpayers whose incomes were low enough to qualify for the credit in the previous taxable year. Another difference is that who qualifies for the minimum credit in general, what is an eligible taxpayer for that purpose. So as the commissioner described, the governor's proposal is to make that minimum credit available to all taxpayers, whereas the House and Senate limit the minimum credit to taxpayers that received an advanced credit in the previous year. Another policy difference is the treatment of 18-year-olds. So the House bill makes 18-year-old children, qualifying children, eligible for the young child credit, which is at a higher amount, whereas the Senate and governor, 18-year-old children would continue to qualify for the credit for older children. Another difference is the effective date. So the House changes are effective for tax year 2025 and later with no expiration, whereas the Senate and governor's provisions are effective for tax year 2025 to 2028. Another policy difference is the treatment of advanced payments. So under current law, as the commissioner mentioned, the Department of Revenue has permissive authority to establish this advanced payment program, but it's not required. Both the House and the Senate adopted language or included language that requires the Department of Revenue to establish those payments in 2025 and later. So that program would be required to continue. There's differences based on the sort of policy differences between the provisions. There's differences in costs and also how many years are covered. So there's differing amounts deposited in that child tax credit account that the commissioner described. You can see the differences on the table there. It's $32.3 million for the House, $9.9 for the Senate, and $45 million for the governor. And finally, then, in addition to the amounts deposited into the child tax credit account, there's some additional costs in the House and governor's position. So the House bill pays for $7.8 million of the cost of providing the credit to 18-year-olds directly from the general fund. And in the governor's bill, there's an administrative appropriation, and the amounts are $1.887 million in fiscal 25 and then $4.772 million in the tails. And that concludes the walkthrough of this table. Happy to answer any questions, and I'm happy if Ms. Pollack has anything to add.
Madam Chair, no, nothing to add. Mr. Williams did a great job.
Forgetting about this. We don't have the switches in the House. So Mr. Williams went over the fiscal kind of differences. Those are in the last two rows of the comparison table that he handed out. And so we're currently just handing out a spreadsheet that highlights those fiscal differences for folks. And if there's any questions from conferees about that, then we can go to fiscal staff. But otherwise, I think Mr. Williams kind of covered the high points of the differences in the fiscal approaches. Chair Rest, did you have anything to add?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Senate tried to achieve a balance, if you will, between preserving the major features of the child tax credit, but recognizing that there were other needs of the legislature and our members this year, and seeing how if we could preserve the goals with the minimum tax credit, et cetera, at a lower cost, and that's what we did with regard to. We took some provisions that were or approaches that were the governor's with regard, for example, to income restrictions, which the House did not do. But on the other hand, the House and the Senate are limiting the recipients of the minimum credit to those who had applied for the advanced credits the year before. So acknowledging the incentive with the next year. And then perhaps the biggest difference is the cost of the minimum credit that has been reviewed with how many years we're each paying for it. And the governor's proposal was $20 million, yours was 17, and ours came down to almost 10. But paying for it for only 2 years. Commissioner Marquardt has made the argument that to really grasp, understand, and be able to plan for the ongoing minimum credit, that the program needs to be in place for 3 years. And the Senate is moving toward that position, and hope we can get there with adjustments other places that are right now that are Senate priorities. And that would be another cost of $5 million. And so we appreciate the argument that the commissioner is making with regard to that. I do not include, as neither does the governor, as has been remarked, the 18-year-olds. And there is a cost savings in that, and 18-year-olds are adults. It's a holdover from including 18-year-olds in the working family credit, but we don't go there with the CTC, and that cost was almost $8 million, and almost $22 million of your $32 in the out year. And so right now we both have that special revenue fund transfer at occurring for 26 and 27, where the governor had it for the all 4 years, 26 and 29. And I think we can come together on these things and do it. Strongly consider doing the third year, but making sure that House priorities in other parts of the bill can be met with that. And certainly the Senate will participate. And I'm not talking about splitting the difference anywhere, just on what makes good policy and where we can keep our priorities, but maybe let go a little bit of our money. And I think we're going to find that in other parts of the bill as well. And the Senate, I believe, is going to help us get there. And I trust that the House will do the same. I don't have a motion right now, because we need to see where the soft spots are in other parts in terms of our priorities. But I appreciate what the House did in meeting the governor's priorities on this nationwide. I mean, truly, truly extraordinary. I don't call much of anything historic anymore, because it's an overused word, but it really is extraordinary what Minnesota has accomplished, and that other states are also doing with attempts where the federal government gave us a boost and then dropped us. And I'm glad to see that states are saying we're not dropping this initiative to reduce child poverty. And I talk about it sometimes as, you know, some little kid right now can, 15 years from now, can turn to his parents and say, because of me, because I was a child in an impoverished family, we are no longer a family in poverty. So that child can say to his or her parents, thank me. Thank me. I did it for you guys. And I just hope that we can, and I'm actually I'm pretty confident that we'll find a way of at least adding a third year to the viability of the program that the commissioner insists, and I tend to agree rightly so, with this program. We can do without the fourth year, but perhaps the third year is becomes a necessity to be able to say whether it's been actually successful. So we're going to work toward that effort during this conference committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Rest. So, yeah, I agree with all that you said. I mean, as you can tell, I think that it's right that we're really proud of the work that we were able to do together last year on behalf of children and families in our state. And, you know, this will, to your point, have a lasting impact on people after we're out of these seats, all of us in the room. And you know, I just, the leadership of Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan and Commissioner Marquardt on this just really can't be overstated. It was just always all along their main priority, the main thing that they told us, you know, we want to do in the tax bill. And, you know, I'm just really grateful that we all were moving in the same direction. And you know, having a really good advanced periodic payment, to your point, we know the impact that this had on families during the pandemic when they were able to get that periodic payment from the federal child tax credit. And, you know, and we're just hoping to build on that work. I did just want to lift up a couple of the kind of differences in our bills. We did talk to some advocates just about the, you know, the we kind of create a cliff with introducing further means testing to the advanced periodic payment. Obviously, the credit itself is means tested. It is really focused on those families in our community that need help the most. But, you know, we have a phase out in the credit so that it's not like if you make, you know, 20 extra bucks, then you don't get your credit. It sort of phases down as income goes up. And so when I was kind of, you know, examining different scenarios, that was something that was really important to me. It didn't raise the cost like that much. It raised it somewhat. But, you know, I'm pretty committed to that part of our program design. Just because I think that it makes it a little bit smoother for families and that we should be looking at that. But of course, we're gonna have to discuss the trade-offs on this as we move forward. I wanted to talk a little bit about 18-year-olds. A lot of us have, you know, 18-year-olds. I'll have one in a few years in my home. Well, I don't know. Maybe he'll move out. But kids aren't moving out when they're 18 anymore like they did when I was a youngster. But, you know, a lot of 18-year-olds will be in high school still and are dependents and, you know, are really relying on their parents for all of their material support. And an 18-year-old dependent who's in school doesn't cost any less than a 17-year-old dependent that's in school. And so, you know, we did, you know, thank you to Vice Chair Norris for his work on this and trying to kind of expand that to, you know, 18-year-olds who are sort of excluded from the original plan for financial reasons, of course, like every other sort of limitation that we put on this policy. And, you know, we kind of use this account and I, you know, we make ours permanent after, you know, we put it in the last two, the out biennium and then kind of add it to the base. And I know that that's like a point that we'll just continue to discuss. But I do think, you know, if you look at the administrative appropriation in the governor's position, I mean, we are, you know, this will be an expense to the department to set this program up. And I think if we can find a way to make it permanent when we're putting, you know, kind of those upfront resources into it, that we should do it. We might not be able to do it within the confines of our budget, but I wanted to put that out on the table. So finally, I just want to thank everybody again. I think, you know, Chair Rest is absolutely right that, you know, we're kind of having this discussion today, but how this looks at the end of the day really sort of depends on the dynamics of the rest of the bill. And I also agree when I look at our bills, I'm like, man, I can see a path for us, you know, without too much consternation. I think that we can really, you know, meet the needs of our families and our communities across the state that we have in our two approaches without too much trouble. So that's the conclusion of our business. Chair Rest, you have the gavel tomorrow. Did you want to say a few things?
Yeah, we will be meeting at 10 a.m. We're going to, I think you'll notice that although on the local sales tax reforms, and please don't anybody call it an option, in the Senate Tax Committee, it costs you a quarter every time you ask you and you add that. We took it out of the statutes. Please don't refer it to a local option sales tax. But we have done some reforms based on the provisions from last year, where we did two things. We imposed a moratorium on local sales tax proposals from individual governments. We had six or seven of them that were able to get on the ballot last year. We ratified the Beltrami election for Beltrami not insisting that it be an otherwise general election. It was the only thing on the ballot. They did not have anything other than that. We ratified their decision. I believe that they passed their referendum with something like 94% of the vote, and so we did not make that void. We did not void it. We accepted it. With regard to then our whole approach, we then, at the suggestion of the House and Senator and Commissioner Marquardt, set up a local sales tax advisory task force made up of generally representatives from the from local governments and from the community at large, that was headed by Commissioner Marquardt, and tasked them with finding ways of improving the process by which, if any, that we approach the plans for local governments to impose a local sales tax. We have, I think unfortunately there were no legislators involved to give a legislative perspective, we had, you know, folks from our staffs and sometimes occasionally ourselves, members attending those meetings, and they did produce that report. And then, Madam Chair, as you know, we decided that we had some genuine differences with regard to that attitude toward that report, so we introduced separate bills. And those separate bills now form the differences in our side-by-side of what that reform should look like. So that's going to be a topic tomorrow. We also have we have some 30 more, if they decide to do it, and I think they have until sometime in June, given the permission to take it to a referendum. They don't have to. They still have to make another decision at the local government level to put it on the ballot. And we will see how the voters feel in November of 2024 with regard to those to their proposals. And then we would lift the moratorium, acting adopting, if we can get there, these negotiated what the general law should look like. We have talked, Madam Chair, you and I, about what's the proper level of restrictions and permissions with regard to local governments being able to make these decisions on their own without coming to the legislature. And that requires a real balance, because what we do not want to see, neither one of us, is 15 bills coming next year saying, notwithstanding the reforms you passed, we want something different. If that happens, that's a failure, that we have not been responsive back and forth to what makes reasonable policy for the state of Minnesota, and you and I are real committed that we don't get to that point. So so local sales tax reform will be a topic tomorrow. It will be the discussion topic, like the CTC is today, probably with no motions, but just more fully going into the differences. I think we will have come to agreement on the, for the most part, minor differences in the TIF article, and we will have a motion for you to consider. Perhaps I talked with your staff and so on, that one of your members would move the tax increment article, and we can be done with it. We announced, by way of introduction of that, at the very beginning of this session, that the Senate Tax Committee would not support any general law changes to tax increment financing. There are attempts in other bills to make general law changes, and we will reject them. Also, Representative Lisligard and Senator Housechild as conferees, but also with the broader group of Iron Range delegation, have worked really, really hard to find a good balance in the minerals article. I think we possibly will have agreement on that, and we would take a motion from the House with one more amendment to adopt the minerals article, and we'll be done with that. And then I have been working on the Article 8, Session 4 of the Senate, which is a study as a placeholder for the proposal to repurpose the sales tax imposed on residents of Hennepin County for in 2006, 2007 with regard to the ballpark, and we will be dealing with, hopefully, with the reallocation of those dollars and continuing the sales tax with a focus, as in the current bill, on health care, and then considering what some of the other provisions are going to be. And that this probably will just be a first discussion of that and a very limited one. But it is something that I'm committed to, even though it's not in the House language. But also the another thing that we Senator Klein, who's not a conferee this year, has worked really hard with the department on the changes in assessments. We do not have, neither does the House, the tax score language, but we do have the assessment language, and we are likely to also ask you to be looking at that for possible motion tomorrow as well. So that's those are things that are going to be on the agenda. We, again, probably just making reference to the ballpark study language, but looking, because it's going to come up again, but concentrating the conversation on the local sales tax reform and being able to move the TIF article and the minerals article and perhaps the assessment language. That will be the agenda then for tomorrow's meeting, Madam Chair, and we intend to be there. Yes, that's it.
We picked it up today. We picked it up today already.
Oh, I guess we did that already. Hooray for us.
Yes.
Sorry. It's been really important to Senator Klein. So anyway, so that's for tomorrow. And we hope to move along and then and adopt those provisions.
Great. Okay. Thank you for that preview of tomorrow. And we'll just say, you know, Vice Chair Norris and Senator Klein and Commissioner Marquardt and Ms. Bears have been working really hard on that.
Representative Norris as well.
Yeah, they've been working really hard on that assessment piece, so we're glad we were able to get that done today. So as Chair Russ said, our next meeting will be tomorrow, May 11th, starting at 10 a.m. right here. We hope to see you then. And with that, we are adjourned.
Great.